Coming up on Chirp Weekly Edition, it's Veterans Day, but some soldiers aren't happy about their fellow vets' welcome home.
Students try to stamp out hunger during Homelessness Awareness Week.
Plus, we'll give you an update on the University of Maryland's ongoing diversity debacle.
And Maryland students enjoy Maryland's fourth annual Shirley Povit Symposium. Chirp Weekly Edition starts now.
This is Chirp Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. Chirp Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Welcome to Chirp Weekly Edition. I'm Allie Prout.
And I'm Shauna Stewart. Veterans Day was observed this past Wednesday. While many focused on celebrating vets' accomplishments on the battlefield, some veterans took this holiday to tell those on campus their feelings about the treatment of soldiers once they return home.
Veterans Day. Many associate this holiday with honoring our veterans who have served in past wars with heroic parades and ceremonies. However, some vets feel that despite all the honors, those who served in war are not getting the care they need when they come home. Veterans for Peace, a nonprofit organization of veterans against war, spoke as part of a panel on Wednesday night, Veterans Day, through the university's Living Learning program, Beyond the Classroom. One of the main themes of the panel was supporting veterans not only while in combat, but when they return home as well.
Our communities really have this facade of supporting the troops, quote-unquote, but the reality is that you're on your own when you come home, and if you don't find other veterans to really embrace and empower you, you're pretty much on your own.
Jeff Millard, who was in the military from 1998 until 2007 and served a tour of duty in Iraq from October 2004 to October 2005, feels that citizens are not listening to veterans. And as a result, the positive aspects of military service are emphasized, while the negatives are ignored.
Listen to our veterans and their stories, their experiences, and really integrate that. You know, serving in the military is not G.I. Joe. It's not comic books. It's watching your buddies die. It's killing people. It's coming home and facing increased risk of alcoholism, of drug abuse, of homelessness. That's what being in the military is about. It's not G.I. Joe. It's not comic books and cartoons.
And the feeling of mistreatment toward veterans didn't just resonate in those who recently were in combat. Michael Marceau fought in Vietnam from 1969 to 1970. He works with veterans at Walter Reed Army Medical Hospital and has found that those not in the military may believe they are supporting the troops, but in reality, their methods of giving back need to change.
The military community, which is the active duty military people and their families, are the only one that are being asked to make any sacrifices. In order to get support for the war, everybody in the country has to do some kind of sacrifices. You cannot do what Bush did and say everything's fine, go shopping. I mean, that's not going to support the troops or support the war. Back in World War II, they had paper drives and tin can drives and turn off your lights on Tuesday drives and gas rationing and all that kind of stuff. The whole country felt like they were actually actively supporting the troops by their actions at home. And we don't see that today.
So what needs to be done to help these soldiers? Millard said that a good start would be to help those with post-traumatic stress disorder by getting them the mental health care they need.
Most soldiers with diagnosed PTSD through the VA do not end up homeless. They get their benefits and don't end up falling into homelessness. It's the ones who never get diagnosed, who slip through the cracks, who nobody talks to. That's the person that ends up homeless.
Veterans living with other veterans can also help the transition. Through another veteran support group, Millard lives in a house with other vets in Washington, D.C., which he says has been extremely helpful in the adjustment to a non-combat lifestyle.
The relationships that we forge through this, the lovers and our friends, and they become closer to us. I mean, I don't have much family, but when I have a rough day, I have a house full of vets.
In College Park for Chirp Weekly Edition, I'm Josh Nowotzky.
Last August, the post-9/11 GI Bill went into effect, and many college-enrolled veterans nationwide are finally feeling relief. The bill aids veterans who served after 9/11 transition to college without the hassle of housing and financial burdens. However, of the 82,000 applications approved, only 52,000 have actually received financial aid. Still, veterans can pick up a check from the government to defer college costs until they receive their benefits.
Maryland Secretary of Agriculture Buddy Hinz visited campus last week to talk about the department's new Eat Local campaign. Enter Weekly Edition's Jennifer Memelo was there to find out more about the growing interest in the slow food movement.
Buddy Hinz took the podium in the Prince George's room to nary an empty seat, but the threat of standing room only didn't deter more than 30 students, staff, and faculty from crowding around for a chance to listen to the Maryland Secretary of Agriculture talk about eco-friendly eating habits.
In the last 3 to 4 years, there's been a great increase in the Buy Local campaign, not just in Maryland, but all across the country.
Buying local doesn't mean the grocery store around the corner. Hinz made a point to stress the importance of supporting local farms and crops, not just for the sake of farmers, but for our children.
As we get farther and farther away from the farm, our generations really don't understand how food is produced. You know, when I went to that elementary school that day, I asked children if they know where milk comes from. You know, you always get at least one or two that say a grocery store. And food, you know, you go to a grocery store and there are just shelves full of food, and you just get what you need, and the people bring it out through the back doors. And it's very easy to understand how we have this generation coming on that doesn't have that connection and clearly understand where the food comes from that they have to consume every day.
And while buying local may help those who live in urban areas understand where their food comes from, there's a much simpler reason to do it too.
Consumers have discovered that the produce that they buy in the summer from either roadside stands or grocery stores that feature locally grown produce tastes much better. And if you ship, you know, if you're buying sugar corn or strawberries and they have to be shipped here from California or heaven forbid Mexico, they have to pick that fruit so it can ship. So that means that produce is picked when it's not quite ripe. It's got to be hard enough so it can sustain the travel without too much damage. So they pick that fruit, and sometimes they have to put it through a chemical process to get it to ripen, and by the time it gets to you, it's probably been picked for a week or more, and it's finally started to turn some color that resembles ripeness. Well, when you go to a local farmer's market, in most cases, that product was picked that morning.
If you can't make it to a farmer's market, most local grocery store owners have been open to featuring locally grown produce in their aisles. With agriculture being the number one source of economy for those in the state of Maryland, it's no wonder store owners have been so happy to please.
People ask for it, the grocery stores will provide it, because they're all in competition with one another. They want to make sure that they've got one step up on their competition. So it's all about consumer demand and making sure that those demands are translated to leadership of those retail facilities.
Hinz also took into account the recent health scares from mass-produced, untraceable produce.
Last year, there was an issue with tomatoes. Everybody heard about that. It ruined the tomato industry in the state of Florida, devastated the industry. The crop in Florida was just about to come to market, and when that scare took place, consumers stopped buying tomatoes. The farmers in Florida lost their whole tomato crop. They couldn't give it away. Several months later, they finally traced it back to salsa that came out of New Mexico. And actually believe it came from the peppers and not the tomatoes.
That doesn't mean you should be scared of purchasing imported vegetables and fruits. But just know that the produce you do purchase will certainly be lacking in one thing, a human relationship.
So we've seen this increase in buying local. You know, the other benefits to buy local are that when you go to a farmer's market, you actually purchase from the farmer that produced that product. You get to know that farmer. You get to know where he's from. You ask him questions about how he produced the product, and you get to learn, your children get to learn about the food and fiber that they're consuming. You make a connection.
From the Stamp Student Union, I'm Jennifer Memelo for Terp Weekly Edition.
Last week was University of Maryland's annual Bioscience Research and Technology Review Day. This year's theme, Consequences of Climate Change. The event included three mini-symposiums where experts talked about the impacts of global warming on plants, animals, and human health. Students in the bioscience department had a chance to present their own research projects at a poster session in the Student Union's Grand Ballroom, as well as attend an internship and career fair.
Up next, find out what Maryland students are doing this holiday season to make sure others aren't going hungry. You're listening to Terp Weekly Edition.
Welcome back to Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Allie Prout.
And I'm Shauna Stewart. Holiday season is a time for students to enjoy being at home and eating big meals. But not everyone in College Park is so fortunate. Matt Butner reveals what students are doing on campus to help the hungry and homeless from the area.
It's easy to forget how privileged most of us in America really are. The College Park area is inhabited mostly by fortunate students who have the opportunity to take classes at a prestigious university. When encountering people who are in need, sometimes the easiest thing to do is look the other way. Next week is Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week, and its goal is to bring both awareness and action on behalf of some of our impoverished neighbors. English major and senior Jeremy Rice thinks the university could do a lot to help this problem.
I think the amount of manpower that a college university offers, especially one of our size, could go a long way to helping fix some of the problems.
Despite balancing work and school priorities, he will find time next week to do his part to help the needy.
I will be on Thursday going to the Food and Friends in the morning and helping prepare some food. And I will also be turning in some canned food for the canned food drive.
It's a small role to play, but he tells us why he is willing to donate his time and belongings to the cause.
I think it's important that for us to, you know, take care of each other in our community. These are people who are in real need, and a lot of times they have trouble, you know, fighting their way out of that need. And so any help we can give them in their current situation is very important.
Students like Rice can volunteer their time to help a number of different organizations that are working for this cause. Cristela Squardalos, an intern for Maryland's Student Public Interest Research Group, shares what her group is planning.
So we have a couple of different events that we've organized. One is a Hoops for Hunger basketball tournament, and that'll be on Wednesday the 18th from 5 to 9 in the Armory. And then we're also doing like a food drive competition, and there's a homelessness walk on Saturday the 21st. It's with Fannie Mae.
Squardalos realizes that large cooperative events will be the most effective way to get work done.
We've been contacting all different student groups on campus, especially for the Hoops for Hunger. What we want to do is have different organizations on campus create their own basketball teams, and then each would raise a certain amount of money or a certain amount of food to donate to a charity of their choice, and they would compete for that charity so that, like, you know, it raises awareness with groups on campus of, like, the charities that are out there and the work that they're doing, and so that they can help support them. So that's what we've been really trying to do. We're also encouraging individuals. We've been, like, you know, flyering and trying to encourage individuals to come out and play as well so that they can get involved in their community.
It is a privilege and a duty for us to help those in need. But if that isn't enough of an incentive, Squardalos describes the joy a person can experience when they help someone else.
When you see someone, when you've impacted their lives, and then that you see them smile back at you and say thank you, and it's a great feeling. And I think that everyone should, you know, have that satisfaction in their life of knowing they helped someone.
To get a full list of opportunities and places to drop off clothing and food, visit www.marylandprgstudents.org or www.csl.umd.edu. In College Park, for Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Matt Butner.
Since 1997, the University of Maryland has provided more than 12,000 gifts to needy children in the College Park area. Last week, I met with Donna Metz, the woman hoping to fill more than 2,000 gift bags this year alone.
Donna Metz is the Assistant Director of Resident Life on the University of Maryland's North Campus, and explained the inner workings of the university's From Our Hearts to Yours project, which helps distribute gifts to needy children in the College Park area.
What is the overall purpose of the From Our Hearts to Yours project?
The purpose is twofold. This project has been going on for, I think we're in our 13th year. And it originally started at the request of students. Students at our hall councils were looking for some kind of opportunity to give gifts to kids in the community that were needy. And so a group of professional staff and students began work on this project. We actually partnered with College Park Youth and Family Services, and they have remained our partner over the last 12 years or whatever.
So do they help you to distribute the bags, or what is their role?
Yeah, what they do is they are led by a woman named Peggy Higgins, and she is the, I don't know if she's the director for College Park Youth and the Family Services, but she works with a bunch of different organizations in the community that have needy children. And so what she does is she works with all the different agencies and gets their people to come here to come collect the bags.
Okay.
And then each of the organizations distributes them slightly differently.
So how do they identify families who will be needing gifts to their children?
Well, I mean, the organizations themselves pretty much identify.
Yeah.
I mean, we have an orphanage. We have two orphanages. We have a couple school systems that are from lower economic backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
People that kind of hook up with their agencies.
When the students actually come in, like, what's the process for them, like, getting the bags, filling the bags, getting the bags back to you?
So if you live in a residence hall, then you can sign up either through your RA, and the RAs have gone to floor meetings and have signs up by their door saying, you know, if you want to sign up here. If you don't do it that way, you can go down to the residence hall service desk and get a bag from the service desk. The outside groups that come in almost always do it through the internet. And they say, oh, we want a bag. And then what happens is once you tell us what you want, the bags of the children that you want, then we
we give people the
option to pick a gender and an age of a child, or to say they don't care.
Okay.
And then if they say, you know, whatever, then we'll give them from the agencies of the number of kids in each of the age groups.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we'll, you know, we'll sort them out that way.
Right.
Then we give you the bag right before you leave for Thanksgiving. Most students will take them home. Several students hook up with their family members, and they'll either fill one or a couple of bags. And then when they come back to campus, then they leave them at any of the service desks.
Right.
And then our committee actually goes to all the service desks every couple of days, picks them up. We take them all over to Elkton, which is where we sort them and store them until the agencies come and get them.
Gift bags will be distributed on November 16th, and volunteers will collect them between November 30th and December 8th. In College Park, I'm Allie Prout for Terp Weekly Edition.
On the last episode of Terp Weekly Edition, we told you about UMD students' March administration to fight for more say in campus diversity issues. Last week, students continued the fight. At a meeting for the university's Board of Regents, members of the group Students Taking Action to Reclaim Our Education, or STARE, spoke out against the university officials' proposals to merge diversity programs and departments. STARE's arguments did not convince the Board of Regents to change their support for administration. Provost Nerman Favardin did address STARE's complaints and reaffirmed the university's commitment to diversity. He also said the university will cut funding and restructure certain programs as it deals with a $40 million deficit, even if those cuts will be unpopular.
Last week, Terp Weekly Edition's Kara Crawford traveled to one local elementary school to find out how young people are learning about peace.
Elementary school students are frequently told to follow their dreams. And students at Paint Branch Elementary are following their dreams all the way across the globe, to China. The school has partnered with the University of Maryland's Confucius Institute for this year. The mission of the Confucius Institute is to spread knowledge about the Chinese culture and language, and it works with public schools and nonprofit organizations to achieve that. The Institute and Paint Branch Elementary are teaming up to develop this year's One World, One Dream project, which borrows its name from the theme of the Beijing Olympics. Amy Negebauer, who manages the partnership, says the university plays a crucial role in the success of the project.
The partnership with the Confucius Center is actually part of a bigger partnership between the University of Maryland and Paint Branch Elementary School. And this partnership is all about harnessing the power and resources and expertise of the university to help with the development of Paint Branch Elementary School.
The project aims to encourage the children to take on long-term projects that compare American culture with Chinese culture, and to integrate Chinese culture into their social studies and language curriculum. The Confucius Institute supplies Paint Branch Elementary with a Chinese national scholar who helps the students learn the culture and the language. Dr. Jay Teston, the principal of Paint Branch Elementary, explained how the project goals tie into much larger ones for the future of the students.
And so as a public school, it's our responsibility to prepare the children to their future world. And we need to give them an advantage, an edge, so they could play competitively in their future world. And so the partnership with Confucius Institute provides us an instructor who will teach the children Chinese and introduce us to the Chinese culture.
As part of the One World, One Dream project, each grade will focus on a different aspect of Chinese culture. The children will demonstrate what they have learned at the end-of-year Community Day celebration. These year-long projects include exploration of Chinese dancing, Chinese tea ceremonies, the creation of a one-day Chinese restaurant, and the examination of technology in China. These projects are intended to benefit the overall learning experience of the children, as Dr. Teston explains.
We truly want to give the children a well-rounded education. And a well-rounded education does not begin on the college level. It begins right in here. We want to give the children a bird's eye view of what their future will be, which is global, which is diverse, and very competitive. And the preparation to become an effective global citizen begins, once again, right in here, and you develop it along the way.
Numerous colleges within the university are involved in the partnership between the Confucius Institute and Paint Branch Elementary, including the College of Education and the Smith School of Business. Negebauer views the partnership as a potential breakthrough for the university in its relationship with the surrounding community.
I see that this is a huge opportunity to really figure out how a large university can really partner with a local elementary school and really have some mutually beneficial results, because this is a two-way relationship. If this can become a model of how to really make this work, I think that's a huge opportunity for us as well.
This school year has been filled with exciting and enriching activities for the students of Paint Branch Elementary, but one of the biggest highlights has yet to come. The school is planning an educational summit that will allow 15 of its 6th grade students to visit the Nankai University Elementary School in China during their spring break. The trip is just one more way that the University of Maryland and Paint Branch Elementary are working to make their students' dreams come true. In College Park, I'm Kara Crawford for TERP Weekly Edition.
It's being called a victory for students and for free speech. We're talking, of course, about the Board of Regents' decision not to adopt on pornography. State lawmakers had asked the board to write guidelines limiting the showing of objectionable films. This after the controversy over the planned screening last spring of the hardcore film Pirates 2, Stagnetti's Revenge. There was even talk at the time of cutting some state funding to the university system. But now, after lengthy discussion, the regents have defied the legislature's mandate. University officials are praising the action as appropriate protection of the First Amendment. Coming up, Johnny Holiday talks Maryland football and find out what Maryland sports team is taking competition to the next level. TERP Weekly Edition continues in a moment.
TERP Weekly Edition. I'm Shauna Stewart.
And I'm Allie Prout. TERP Weekly Edition's Matt Moderno continues his sit-down interview with the legendary TERP broadcaster Johnny Holiday. This week, the focus is a disappointing football season.
A November 7th loss to NC State put the final nail in the coffin for a Maryland football team that needed to finish the season on a winning streak to become bowl eligible. This marks the first season since 2005 that the Terps will fail to qualify for a bowl game. For more insight on how this season turned out to be such a disaster, I asked Terps broadcaster Johnny Holiday.
The football team has got some legitimate excuses. Number one, they beat themselves a lot. And the Cal game, I mean, they're outclassed, yeah. They were much better, but everybody else, they had a chance to win. And like Ralph said, until we stop making the same mistakes over and over and over again, we're not going to win any games. If they turn the ball over, they get killed. Okay? If they can't run the ball, they get killed. Simple as that.
Some of the Terps' problems this season have been beyond the control of the players or the coaching staff.
I'm always defending these coaches. I said, look, when you lose your starting left tackle, okay, 6'8", Bruce Campbell, whatever, 6'9", you lose your number one running back, Darrell Scott. You lose your All-American punter, Travis Pauls. You lose two of your defensive backs. Now you lose Hartsfield, your starting linebacker. Okay, Moten's been banged up. You've got altogether something like 26 guys. Key guys have missed games. And then you throw in 24 freshmen. You've got no shot, really.
The injury bug that has plagued this team also means that some of the more inexperienced players have been thrown into the fire before they were truly ready.
You got a guy playing center who never played before. He's been a guard. Okay, you got Paul Penninger, who against Duke was his third offensive line spot. He's never played left tackle. But you know, these guys are jumping around, and you got no consistency, and you wonder why you're 2-6. There's the answer right there. You know, and when you got to put in freshman running backs, everybody talks about Caleb Porzel, the kid is fast. Well, you got to get past the line of scrimmage to be fast, okay? And then the conditions of the games, the muddy fields, and he's not a muddy field runner. He's a freshman. You know, you're gonna get better, but it takes time.
A lack of fan support can't help the situation any.
It's the nature of the beast that everybody loves a winner. You know, when you're winning, you're the kings. You're the heroes. Everybody loves you. I notice any time a team, not only Maryland, but the Redskins or Orioles or Nationals, whoever, any time a team loses, you see the message boards. Just, I mean, they can crucify somebody. And unnecessarily so, I think. And this is the same coach and the same players that the week before beat somebody. Okay, now you may have a few less players because of injuries, but people don't want to hear about that.
Holiday continued to harp on that point with another example Terps fans can understand.
The fans can be, they can be tough. I mean, real. Look at what happened to Gary last year. You know, people saying, it's time to make a change. Better be careful what you wish for. You know, they pushed Lefty out of here and got Bob Wade and, you know. So I think that's one of the worst things that's happened to sports is all these experts on television, so-called experts, and radio. Everybody's an expert. Everybody can take shots. Everybody can be critical. And these websites where you don't have to put your name down. You can just make a comment. Get rid of Debbie Yao. Get ready and whatever. And it's happened to me. I've seen people write on there, it's time for him to go. Get him out of there. You know, what have I done? I haven't done anything. You know, he doesn't give the score enough. What? Score more than, you know, we don't know where the ball is. What? You know. Then when you win, you never see any of that stuff. And I asked Gary and Ralph, I said, you ever read this stuff? He said, absolutely not. He said, you know, it's a bunch of dweebs that are sitting there anyhow doing this stuff. He said, when you have to rely upon your coaching based on what they're saying on a website, no, I haven't got time for that stuff.
One good thing about sports is there's always next season to look forward to. With special thanks to Johnny Holiday for Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Matt Moderno.
The Maryland field hockey team clinched the ACT tournament last week with a 3-2 win over UVA, and in the process made history. The Lady Terrapins are the first field hockey team in Maryland's history to go undefeated during the regular season with a 17-0 record. The upcoming NCAA semifinals will be held in Winston-Salem, North Carolina on November 20th. Good luck.
Should student-athletes get paid? And what would it take for there to be a BCS playoff in college football? Some may think these questions are reserved for only the most avid sport fans, but in the midst of a tough economy, these issues have an impact on the entire university community. A debate about the pros and cons of college sports drew a high-profile panel and a capacity crowd to the recent Shirley Povich Symposium. Terp Weekly Edition's Michael O'Neill has an inside look.
Although the weather might not have been pretty, hundreds of students and sports fans still packed the Colony Ballroom at the Stamp Student Union Center for insightful debating regarding the world of intercollegiate athletics from some of the best sports minds. The annual symposium is held in honor of the late Shirley Povich, a famous longtime sports writer for the Washington Post. Michael Wilbon, a Washington Post sports writer and host of the TV show, Pardon the Interruption, arrived just in time for the discussion to offer his usual passionate perspectives regarding college sports. University of Maryland Athletic Director Debbie Yao participated in the discussion, as did beloved Maryland men's basketball coach Gary Williams. Even Brett Kerwin, chancellor of the University of Maryland system and co-chair of the Knight Commission of Intercollegiate Athletics, was on hand providing insight on budget issues related to collegiate sports. Many students attended the forum. One student, freshman Richie Green, wanted to come just so he could see talk show personality Mari Povich moderate the discussion. Green believes scholarship money is already sufficient for student athletes and that they don't deserve to make an income.
As a student, I don't really think paying this as much tuition as we do, I don't think it's necessary that they get paid extra money. I think I would prefer it if the burden was placed off us a little bit.
The man who was most blunt and perhaps provided the most entertainment for the evening was ESPN SportsCenter anchor and Maryland alum Scott Van Pelt. Van Pelt spoke openly on his overall opinion of the NCAA.
I enjoyed this topic because I think it's one that we don't talk about. We don't talk about the hypocrisy of the NCAA and the nonsense that exists. They print money, period. They print money for BCS football and basketball schools. That's what they do. And to pretend like it's this whole charade of student athlete, in some cases it is, but in many cases it's not. And so I enjoy the discussion, and I'm not afraid to say my opinion because they can't take my scholarship away.
Now to the question all college football fanatics wonder. Could there ever be a BCS playoff?
There's no doubt in my mind that the playoff system would be monstrously popular. Maybe in some ways, this is sacrilegious, I think it could be as popular, maybe more than March Madness, because college football has the most passionate fan bases in America, period.
Another panelist at the forum, Stefan Heyer, a former Maryland offensive lineman and now starter for the Washington Redskins, believes for the amount of money student athletes bring to a university, paying them should not be out of the question.
Like any job, you expect compensation, not just the compensation of your scholarship. It's like these guys not only put their time in the situation, but they put their bodies on the line to produce revenue for the schools. So if you're risking your health, I can't see why these guys can be paid something other than what their scholarships don't cover.
Something Heyer seemed to be more unhappy about is the accessories student athletes are now provided by the athletic department. One such item student athletes are now provided is suits.
Yeah, I wasn't here for that. I wonder how that works too, being that there's 700 student athletes and, what, one masseuse? But I guess it's a good additive, you know what I mean?
In College Park, I'm Michael O'Neill for Terp Weekly Edition.
Maryland students graduating this semester will get a lesson on business before they get their degree. James Pitts, Vice President of Northrop Grumman's Electronic Systems Sector, is speaking at this winter's commencement ceremony. Mr. Pitts oversees business operations in areas such as defense electronics, aerospace management, and navigation systems, just to name a few. Mr. Pitts himself is a graduate of Johns Hopkins University. He serves on the University of Maryland Medical System. Winter commencement is on Saturday, December 19th at 7 p.m.
That's it for this week's Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Allie Prout.
And I'm Shauna Stewart. We'll be back next week with more news from in and around College Park. And don't forget, you can take us with you. Find our podcast at www.twe.umd.edu.
This has been Terp Weekly Edition, produced and written by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. Please join us next week at the same time for a look at the issues in and around the University of Maryland College Park.